All right. Well, welcome everybody. This is our research roundtable for Wednesday. Almost said January. Wednesday, February 22nd, 2023. Really, because February just has gone like this, right? So it's practically March. So today we're doing something a little bit different. I know we have some people who haven't joined a roundtable before, so welcome. Glad to have you here. What we have been doing the last several meetings is having usually one speaker come out and address a particular topic and then open the call for Q&A. In talking with Sean, what we'd love to really see and what our intention was in creating the research roundtable was to have it be more interactive and more of a discussion with you guys sharing, either sharing some of the things that you've researched that you've found could be on a particular topic of focus, or maybe even something you stumbled across while you were researching something else. That happens to me a lot. Or it can also be some place where your research has kind of hit a dead end and you want some input, some feedback. You want to kind of bounce that around so that other people can share and say, oh, you know, have you considered this angle? Have you considered that angle, et cetera? Or it could be that you have done some research and now you're wondering, okay, where do I go from here? What do I do with what I have discovered? So this group is by invitation only, so that we know that there's only, as Sean would say, trusted entities among us, because from time to time, sensitive information definitely does get shared here. And we do record these, but the recordings are private just to the group. So we don't make those public anywhere. And if you will also take a moment to say, if you have registered on the causeofamerica.org website, but you haven't, but you don't see research roundtables show up in your dashboard, and you would like it to, because that's where we post the links to the replays. I usually do a video replay, an audio only replay, and a transcript from almost all of these, especially the more technical topics. I may not do a transcript for today. It's a lot. It takes a lot of time to go through and clean up the transcripts. So I always do them when Sean is speaking. He provides a tremendous amount of very detailed information. So whenever it's info like that, I tend to do a transcript. With this kind of being an open group forum today, I may not do a transcript today. But at any rate, where you'll find those recordings is in the Research Roundtable grouping within the Cause of America website. So all you have to do to register, it literally takes 1 minute. You go to the top, you click on the little person icon. I think it even says register or sign up. You just put in your info and then you're in, right? And I can go in and add you to the Research Roundtable group so that you have access to those replays. So there's that. So what we're doing today is I have a couple of resources that I want to share with you. Hang on, I have an agenda here. I don't want to have to keep looking down. So I have a couple resources that I'll share with you, and then we'll also open it for people to share. Like I said, if you want to share an update of what you're working on or anywhere where you've maybe hit a block with your research and you want some input, some suggestions, or if you don't know what to do next with your research, or if you want to connect with other people who are working on similar things, we do have a chat feature in here. You can swap information, or if you let me know who you want to connect with, I can connect you afterwards as well. So the first thing, if you hadn't heard, Sean and I have been working on this Elections 101 series, and it's an educational video series about how our elections work or don't work in the U.S. And but it's really broken down into very small bite-sized videos. So the first 16 videos are done, and they go from as simple as what is a voter roll to why in the world did we agree to have centralized voter rolls? Like, how did they convince us that was a good idea, right? So it's those types of things. The voter rolls is kind of what we're focusing on first, but we have a lot more of those to come. And the intention with that was twofold. One, so that people could come in and get more information. You know, we have a revamp of the Cause of America website is in the works right now. Ashley and I have been working with the tech team on getting that rolled out. What I mean is Ashley and I are like, we want this, and the tech team's doing it. We're not actually doing anything for the website because that's not our forte. But Ashley and I have been working with the tech team to roll that out. So Elections 101 will have its own page on the Cause of America website when that's done. In the meantime, you can find them on our Rumble channel. And Ashley's been doing an amazing job pushing those out everywhere. For anybody that doesn't know, Ash is our new communications director for Cause of America. So she's been doing an amazing job amplifying those videos and getting those out pretty much just as fast as I can get them edited, produced, and ready for prime time, right? So, on the new look of the website, Elections 101 will be featured rather prominently on the homepage, so that if you have somebody who's brand new, whether you send them to Cause of America or whether they just find the Cause of America website, there's an easy way where they can get started, dig in, and start learning. And it's going to be in kind of an FAQ format, to where a person can click to find, if they're looking for a very specific topic, they'll be able to easily find and locate the video or videos that address that topic, but we'll also have long form versions of the video. So let's say that you have somebody who's brand new that wants to work with your team, your election integrity efforts in your state or your county or parish, and they don't know anything at all. And we know you're busy, right? You have a lot to do. As much as you'd love to sit down and handhold this person and walk them through every little step, wouldn't it be great to just plug them into something so that they can get started and start learning a lot of stuff? I know a couple of states have some things, but a lot of states don't necessarily have a start here type of setup. So that's one of the two main purposes of this, right? Is to be able to plug people in to get started, to learn all about the jargon that we use and the things that we talk about when we're trying to restore free and fair elections. And it's also, if you are looking for the other sort of prong to that, is if you are looking for a short, succinct way to explain one complex part of our election systems, or why we can't, like, there's a great one that Sean and I just did that's why we can't clean the voter rolls, why we need a clean slate. It's a really great, succinct video. So this is the kind of thing that you could play for whoever you're meeting with, whether it's elected official, you know, county commissioner, whatever, somebody that you are trying to get to listen and understand what we need to fix and why we need to fix it. These are really short, shareable, educational videos that will allow you to do that. So that's kind of the vision that we had when we created those. And I just wanted to let you know that they're up, they're running. They're not on the Cause of America website yet because of that overhaul that's underway, which we expect to be complete. I'm not really sure what the timeline is on that, but I know that it's ramping up. It should be soon. But you can get them now on our Rumble channel. And Ashley's on. Ash, can you post the link to the Rumble channel in the chat? Either Ash or Linda, that would be awesome. The other, is Eric in Washington? Yes. Okay, awesome. The other resource that I want to share with you guys, and some of y'all might know about this, but I have to tell you, I personally have been blown away by what Erica in Washington has been doing. I absolutely love these. This is not a skill that I have. I'm a writer. I'm not a talker, clearly, as you could tell. I'm not a graphic designer. So if you give me something and ask me to do a graphic design, it's going to look like a second grader did it. No, second graders probably better at technology. So it'll look terrible, okay? Because that's just not my forte, how to make things look fantastic on paper. Erica has been putting together these one-page graphics about all sorts of different topics. I'm going to let her talk to you about it, about what she's done specifically. And she's been posting them on Telegram. And don't worry, we're going to share the link with you. And she's also got the Rosebot working in Telegram to where you can specifically locate exactly what you're looking for. It's pretty genius. So, Erica, I'm going to unmute you. No, I can't unmute you. You have to unmute you, I think. So come on out here and talk to us about the educational stuff you've been doing.
Okay, can you guys hear me?
Yep.
Perfect. Okay, so, you know, I've been putting together these little charts, and they vary in topics. It kind of started as just something I was working on for my team, but then, you know, people kind of started liking them, so I figured my team was probably sick of seeing them in our chat, so I made a separate channel for them. And can I share my screen on here?
I believe so.
Let's see if I can figure that out.
See if you can do it.
Okay, so let's see what this button does. Window. Okay, so here we go. This, so there's a chat and there's a channel.
Hang on, let's see if it's...
I guess I have to push share all the way. Do you guys see it now?
There we go. Now we can see it, yeah.
Let me get rid of these little smiley face guys. How do I make them go away? Okay. So this is the channel, and I kind of had set it up so it would be like a library. So I wanted it to be easy for people to find different topics and stuff. So this is the channel, and the way it's set up, there's supposed to be different topics. So for example, here's vulnerability flowcharts. So if you wanted to see the vulnerability flowcharts from the channel, you just click on the comments. And then it's going to take you to all of the things that I put under that category. So you can just kind of scroll through there and see what's there. Another way to do it, like Amy was saying, was you can do, so in the chat, if you wanted to pull up a certain topic, I have these lists in here. We categorized everything we put notes to all of the charts. So like Rose will post this list. So this list here has all of the names of the different charts that we've added. So if you wanted to pull up anything by topic, so let's just pick one.
Erica, can you tell them first, like, what did they type in? Because I just think this is the coolest feature, because I needed to find something specific. I don't even remember what I was doing. And I know I had seen something that Erica did. And in about 4 seconds, I was able to find exactly what I needed because of this. Well, once I figured out what to type in, because of this bot function that it does. So what do you type in to get the list?
So, you know, I'm not actually sure if everyone else can type to get the list, but there is, you know, I try to post it every once in a while. So you can probably just find the list by scrolling up. Because I'm not sure if anyone that's not an admin, that's probably something we need to experiment with. So all I type is backslash and then notes, and then Rose will post all of the list of notes. And then from that list of notes, you just would type a hashtag and then followed by whatever the note is that you want to see. So I just do hashtag, we'll do ranked choice here. So we'll do ranked. And there's no spaces, there's underscores, because it doesn't work with spaces. So if there's an underscore, you have to make sure and type that in as well. So rank choice. So you just type that in and then you push send. And then Rose will pull up the rank choice chart there that I came up with. So there's all different kinds of topics. I do want to give everyone a heads up that some of this, because I'm in Washington, so that's what I'm most familiar with. Some of this may not be exact for other states. It may slightly vary because I'm going off of what I know for our state. I try to keep some things universal, but it doesn't always work out that way. So, but another thing too, if anyone was interested in, you know, using any of these things for anything, I would be more than happy to like make small adjustments so it would fit your state if you were trying to, you know, use it to share with other people or something like that. Another option from the chat. So, okay. So let me explain. So the difference between the chat and the channel, the channel is not going to show you every time I post a new chart. It's going to only show you if I post a new topic or if I post like, sometimes I'll post just a chart on there, but generally I put them under topics. So if you go to the chat, you can see all of the ones that I posted new. If you want to just kind of browse through them instead of searching, oh, welcome, Gail. And Linda,
I know we have people, you have people signing up, Gail and Linda. If I could interrupt you real quick, Erica, so you guys can see, because she has the bot to help control from other bots and spam coming in. When you join the chat, you have to just push that button. It'll say like, push this button for proof of life, meaning that you're a real person. And then it'll let you start to access all this other stuff. Go ahead, Erica.
Exactly. So then if you want to just browse the stuff and not pull it up by topic, you can either scroll or you can go, you know, if you click on the top of the chat here, yours may look a little bit different. But if you just click on photos or media, you can see all of the different stuff right there. So there's kind of a lot there. You know, like I said, it varies from topic to topic. But so another thing, so sometimes if you see a photo like this one here, it's, you know, it, you can read it, but it's not the best quality, I guess. It's kind of blurry. I try to post other file formats in there as well. So there'll be like a PDF and typically an HTML file that you can pull up if you wanted to either print it out or, you know, send it in an attachment or just have a clearer copy of it. So I always try to post multiple file formats, but that's only going to be visible in the chat, not the channel. So I did do a poll on the channel about, you know, what did people want to see, because I wasn't really expecting this to become like a national thing. I wasn't really, you know, it was just kind of something I was doing on my own, and it just kind of, you know, grew. But I did a poll at one point asking what kind of stuff people wanted to see more of, and these are the results here. And one of the top one here is strategy options for moving forward. Well, so, you know, I was kind of kicking myself in the butt for putting that as an option there, because, you know, I'm not sure. There's a lot of different strategies. So one thing I kind of want to do is start taking, you know, talking to other teams and seeing what are they working on, what has worked for them, and try to put those kind of things in a one page, you know, infograph to share with other people, you know, so they can get ideas and get motivated and try to start taking action in their state. So I would love to, you know, try to get in touch with some other people who would be willing to work with me and explain their process so I can put it on a visual aid for people. Am I missing anything, Amy?
I don't think, guys, I don't think Erica has any idea how good these are. I think that's why you were so surprised. Cause I'm telling you, when I saw the first one, I was like, what? And showed the whole Cosm America team, like, you guys, I'm like, this is what we need that I don't know how to do. Like, I can write you a white paper, I can write stuff, but I'm like, these one pagers, they're eye catching. I mean, look at them as she's scrolling through. They're really good. They're really good. And Erica, God bless her, is willing to share all of this, right? So no credit, no attribution needed. And look how long the list is too. That's like the categories of what's in here, right? So I see, well, Alan figured it out. Okay, I was going to say, when you put in the name of what you want to find, you have to put the hashtag first. So, yes. Erica, can you scroll to the list?
Yes, yes.
Mm-hmm. Scroll up to the list. Yeah, so if I want to find about excess ballots, I have to put hashtag excess underscore ballots. If you just put it, so I see, and I see people do that in the chat frequently where they just put it in and they can't find it. So you just have to put that hashtag first and then it'll pull it right up. I kind of want to test and see. So I did hashtag notes. That did not work. So just so you know, Erica, apparently non-admin cannot get the list.
Can you try to do a forward slash notes and see if you're allowed to do that?
I mean, I did forward slash. I said hashtag, but I actually did forward slash notes. Yeah.
Okay.
So
maybe I'll just have to do that more often or something to post the list when I put new stuff up there.
Well, I think if people know, you know, just scroll up, because I feel like you post it pretty regularly. So people just, they just kind of have to scroll up till they see the list to find out what the names are, to know what the options are to look for. Do you guys have any questions for Erica? Oh, yeah, I see Alan's got a hand up. Go ahead, Alan.
This is pretty simple. Tennessee is dramatically different than Washington. And I'd like to modify these. Do we have an editable version?
I have an editable version in the program that I'm using, which is just a simple thing that you can do online or you can download it. I don't usually post that because unless you have the program, it won't really do much for you. I'd be happy to either share with you the program, but then you would have to get a hold of me to share the editable version, or I can try to make edits for you as well. You know, if it's like a small change, it's not a big deal. It won't take me long at all because I have them all saved. But it's in this draw.io.
Okay.
You would have to get, you'd have to get to the download the program or go to the website before you would be able to edit any of them anyways, if that makes sense.
Can you put your DM address on Telegram and I can just send you a request?
Yes. Do you want me to send it to you on Telegram or are you asking me to put it in the chat here?
Just put just put your Telegram address handle in the chat, and I can address the issue with you on Telegram.
Okay, I just posted it on the chat on Telegram. I wasn't sure if you were meeting on Telegram or here on Teams, so I just
put it here on Teams too.
I'm on both.
So that if other people want to connect with you.
Okay.
It's just at Erica PNW Pacific Northwest.
Yeah, we're really proud of our number one heritage ranking, and I'm going to begin a months long process of re-educating our election commission. So I need all the help I can get.
Perfect. Well, let me know how I can help. You know, if I'm happy to send you the editable versions, like I said, but if you don't want to deal with it, I'm happy to also make any edits for you. I just need to know exactly what it is because you know, I would love to be able to do it for everybody's, you know, unique. I dropped you guys. One second. I would love to be able to do it for everybody's state, you know, but I just don't know what those processes are. So.
Well, we can. If you get sick and tired of it, I can do it. So, whichever way you want to go. Appreciate your help.
Absolutely. Awesome. No problem.
Anybody, it looks like Gail, you have a question for Erica.
Hi, Erica. Thank you so much. Yeah, I'm working on the Help America Vote Act, and like you, Amy, I'm really not great at putting all of this concisely, but it's so important that we get this out there across America. Some of the things that are in there. And so, Erica, I'm just curious, I guess we can do this offline, but I'd like to, you know, schedule maybe some time with you and maybe brainstorm a little bit and how I can work on it. This is, by the way, Amy, this is what you were talking about today was absolutely exactly where I'm at in my life with research. So when it's my turn, I'm really looking forward to sharing with you guys. So thank you.
Thanks, Gail. So I've been wanting to do a Help America Vote Act. I've started one a couple times, but I still have like some holes missing in that. So if you can help me try to fill in those holes and we could work together on that, that would be great.
Perfect. I'll message you after this and we'll connect.
Perfect. Sounds great.
Awesome. And Colonel Sean Smith is here. I see Sean's got a hand up. Go ahead, Sean.
Hey, all. He just, can you hear me okay?
Yep.
Okay, perfect. For what it's worth, my apologies. So a few things real quick. Is that me?
Yeah.
It's like a drum. It's like a bongo drum. So a few things really quick. First, you mentioned a strategy. Is it Erica that mentioned the strategy? So yes. If Michelle Replogle, our chief of partnership core team from Cause America, was here, she'd probably be.
Are you talking about me?
Oh, she is here.
Michelle's here.
She's probably gritting her teeth because I have been working on a strategy. I'm supposed to have finished it a long time ago, and it's not earth shattering. It's just an organizing tool to make sure people are on the same page in terms of what we're working towards and the kind of, you know, ends and ways that we can use. And each state is different. Each circumstance is different. Some things are going to work in some places and not in others. But the idea is to think through what we're trying to work towards and not have it be haphazard. And that way, when people have resources or ideas, they can fall into or help us adjust that framework. That's the whole purpose of a strategy, is to focus and achieve or enable unity of effort. So the other thing I was going to say is, and Amy would probably say this, except she's too nice. So you guys have seen the 101 videos. They're basically like me sitting here at my desk talking, which is, you know, nobody hates that more than I do. So there's all these graphics. If there's somebody who can do animation and illustration and wants to help us to convert some or all of those into sort of brief educational videos or do versions of them where we can do more illustration of the things that we're talking about, that I think would be a lot more effective. We talk about that a lot. And then the third thing, I just wanted to, since you brought up Help America Vote Act, and this is the research forum, I just wanted to just put a little data point in everybody's mind. So the current chair of the election of the DHS CISA, so Department of Homeland Security, Cybersecurity Infrastructure, Security Agencies, Election Infrastructure Sector Coordinating Council. So remember, the government and sector coordinating councils are the two groups of people who signed the joint memo that said this is the most secure election in U.S. history. The current chair is Ed Smith, who was previously with Smartmatic and then Dominion as a vice president and is now Smartmatic again. The chair right before him was Kay Stimson. Kay Stimson is a vice president of Dominion Voting Systems for Government Affairs. She helped write and pass Help America Vote Act. You want to know where we got it? You want to know what their motivation was? That's where they got it. So basically, NASS and the voting system vendors wrote the Help America Vote Act to channel federal funds into grant dollars under the premise of fixing election problems. And what they did was get the camel's nose under the tent flap. So just a little point of trivia.
Awesome. Thanks for that, Sean. Erica, can you post a link to the channel and like inside our chat here on Teams, can you post a link to the channel and the chat for your election education materials?
Absolutely, no problem. I can do that right now here.
Awesome. I think most people here are probably on Telegram. You do have to be on Telegram to view these. It's not like Twitter where you can just view it from a browser or whatever. You have to be on Telegram. So I know if you're not, you're probably like, oh, one more thing. But I think it's worth it if that's the only reason you're on for. And so I posted, while Sean was talking, I posted an example of the Illustrator video that he's talking about. It's, you guys have all seen these. You probably just maybe didn't know what to call them or whatever, but it's where the hand is drawing, it's narrated, and there's a cartoon illustration that the hand is drawing while you're talking. So we actually, through my husband's business, we actually have the software to do that. All that is required is writing a script, which I got you on that, right? Like, because Sean and I have already done all these videos, so I could even pull the transcription and use that, clean that up for the script. But what we don't have is an artist who can draw, and it's not just hand drawing line images with a Sharpie or whatever, it has to be drawn in a particular sequence in a digital app like Illustrator or something like that. It's not particular, if a person already knows how to do that, it's not particularly difficult for us to instruct them, like, here's how we need you to do this. And then once that piece is done, we really can drop it into the software, do the voiceover, or I could even use Sean's voiceover that he's already done, right, for these little short videos. But that's the piece that we're missing here as part of the team. So I don't know if anybody knows any digital illustrators who would be willing to donate, because like everything for election integrity, our budget is this much. So if you have anybody on your team in your states that you know or whatever that would be willing to partner with us on that, that would be amazing. Yeah. And we have some other things. I'm also working with a retired attorney that Sean connected me with, who's also interested in working on this project. And he brought someone as well, but neither one of them has any illustration ability. So that's kind of like the piece that we're missing right now. Erica, did you have a question? I saw your hand go up briefly.
Well, it just kind of, what you said kind of got my wheels turning a little bit, because my group had been talking about doing like a series of short videos on different stuff. But so if you, you know, I don't know, can you explain a little bit more about what kind of graphic things that this person needs to know how to do? Like you said, what program?
It doesn't have to be Adobe Illustrator. And because I'm not an illustrator, I don't know what other apps like that are popular. I use the Adobe suite. I use Adobe Photoshop, so I'm familiar with that sort of, you know, brand of like the creative suite. So if you look without clicking on the video, because I know if everybody clicks on the video, it's going to start the audio, which if you're muted, is fine. Feel free to watch that video. It's only a couple of minutes long. And this is one that he did for a client, and the client actually did the voiceover. But you can see just from the little image that it posted in the chat along with the link, you can see how there's like line drawing. So the main thing that needs to happen is the order in which the illustrator creates the image has to be the order in which we want it to appear drawn in the video. And apparently that is not normally how cartoonists draw their stuff. They draw things out of sequence in order to make sure that their proportions are even and that, you know, that the head isn't three times the size of the body and whatever, the eyes are in the right place. And so they do a lot of kind of jumping around, I think, when they draw things, and which ends up looking terrible in one of those Illustrator videos. It's very confusing and it makes no sense. And if you're not familiar with, like, if you don't maybe haven't seen these or don't have like marketing experience or whatever, these videos are kind of a phenomenon because there's something about the way that it's drawn that actually holds the attention far longer than a typical video. Now you still need something at the beginning to like capture attention and keep it there, but the attention longer because it's storytelling along with illustration. And when these videos first started being used, which I think was, I don't know, maybe like 2005 or something, they've been around a while, but when they started to become popular, it was because people found they could, rather than doing a long form sales letter on the internet, people would sit there and watch a 30-minute video because it was almost hypnotic. Between the combination of the storytelling and the illustration in some way that it sort of combines right and left brain activity. But if the illustration is done just in kind of a normal way that illustrators tend to illustrate, then it becomes jumpy and all over the place, and it totally loses that continuity of attention capturing. So that's about the best way that I could explain it, Erica. My husband could explain it a lot better because he was the one that was hiring the cartoonist to do this type of work. But did I at least answer your question, Erica?
Yes, and I did get a chance to try to see what you meant on the video, so that was helpful also.
Okay, cool. I saw somebody else has a hand up. David in Washington. Nope. Did you change your mind? That's okay.
No, I pushed the wrong button.
Oh, okay.
No, okay. Just to kind of expand on what Erica was mentioning in doing our videos. We wanted to use these little cartoon video presentations to kind of distance any of us from any scrutiny, to give the people that are watching it kind of a neutral, non-biased perception. In our 2020 election, we'd actually had found where Sasquatch had voted in our election. So we, through our group kind of bouncing it around, we came up with creating a baby Sasquatch to be our presentation, kind of our presenter in this video, and using kind of a little bit of a humor just to kind of ease the tension of it. We bounced it around for several meetings, but there again, we hit the roadblock with the who could do that. But our kind of basis was to kind of almost make it like a cartoon, to where it was very palatable at a lot of levels and ages, and to kind of keep it very vanilla to people.
Awesome. Well, hopefully, like I said, if we can find an illustrator who's willing to donate some time, then hopefully we can get those going. I'm thinking I may have to have my husband teach me how to use the software, because I know he's very busy. So I'm like, I might have to kind of take that over to be able to do these. But first, next step would definitely be finding someone who could do those cartoons in a digital format for free. Mm-hmm. Okay, and I wanted to address, I saw there was a question from Doug in Montana, who said it would be fantastic if a searchable database could be built, like the library, perhaps, categories by topic. For instance, I have been searching for firms that can provide audits of our ES&S machines before every election cycle, as our Montana laws demand. P.S. I have had zero success in finding such a firm. Any help? So, Doug, I don't know if you've searched the library. We do have, I don't know what you mean by audits of the machines. We have like test reports, like VTSL reports, and those types of documentation, but I would definitely start there. And then, because you guys know there's over 5,000 documents in the library and more being added all the time. Now, the videos, we cannot add videos to the library. So that's why all of the Election 101 things are being housed on our Rumble channel. But I think we'll have a way to. I think I'll be able to put in a document that has hyperlinks into the library so that those will still be searchable, even though they're not housed on the Cause of America website. Sorry, just thinking through logistics out loud here. But Sean, I feel like Sean probably has something to add about that. Audits of the ES&S machines.
What was the question? Whether we have reports on them?
Yes, like Doug says, he's been searching for firms that can provide audits of the ES&S machines before every election cycle, as Montana laws demand. But he's had zero success in finding such firms.
Yeah, so here's the problem with it. So let's talk about ES&S machines as an example. So they have their electionware software that's running on a Dell server, typically. It could be a workstation, might be a small form factor server. Then they have the like DS200s that have the Jetway card inside them, and then a screen, and they're running, I'm trying to remember, I think they're running a UC Linux version. I have to go back and look to be sure. So you have, and you have, you know, pick a medium-sized county, you might have three or four tabulators, you have the server, you have a machine that's being used to do election project design, you have another machine probably used for adjudication, maybe a client to the server that's used for tabulation and reporting. You might have additional systems they're using to connect to or configure systems. Then you have the touchscreen devices. So a county, for example, and I know the size here, you have a let's say a county the size of like Mesa County, Colorado, which uses Dominion, but just as an example, you might have 50 machines. If you took a DoD red team and asked them to audit to make sure they were properly configured and secured and not vulnerable and not compromised either in their software, their firmware, their hardware, during the supply chain, that they met voting system standards, they were still properly configured, all the software was trusted build and no other, they had no, you know, ports open or anything like that, it would take a 5 to 6 man team, and I say, you know, it could be females, they're usually men on the red teams, and they're usually autistic, or at least half of them are, but so it would take them weeks to even make headway into that. They would probably, the way they'd do it is they'd set it up in like a cyber range or an artificial range. They would take all their automated tools and hammer at them. And then they would start, each of them would specialize. One of them would be like a net and comms guy. Someone would be an OS guy. Someone would look at apps. They'd have to have typical operators trying to set them up and use them. They'd use like a cron where they're like setting up a time environment so the machines think it's the election period, so that they could then try to trigger any binary or tertiary triggers inside them that are dependent on time and the users. And all of that would still get you to just a very unsettled feeling about the security of those systems. So the idea, and those are some of the best guys in the country at that kind of work. There aren't very many of those. There aren't 20 of those kind of teams in the Department of Defense. And I'm counting the NSA guys that do a lot of work for DoD cyber. So you have TISMO, you have a couple different Guard and active duty in the Air Force. You have Navy, you know, under the SIGINT guys that own their teams. They don't have very many. They won't like this, but I don't think they're as good as the Army TISMO teams. And they're not as good as the NSA teams. But there aren't that many teams. Outside of the DoD, there are maybe another 15 to 20 teams, most of them not as good. Guys like Mandiant, FireEye, or SixGen have the background. A lot of them are prior military or do defense and national security work. That's it. We got over 3,000 counties in the United States. We don't have enough of the qualified, capable cyber teams to do even a single state the size of Montana. That would be all they could do. They'd have to stop doing national security and defense work. There'd be nobody monitoring the networks that are already getting penetrated, even with tuned intrusion detection protection systems and, you know, qualified, certified cyber defenders watching those systems with heuristic triggers for, you know, user or machine activity that's outside the norm. So the idea that we could audit our systems to make them safe prior to an election is an absolute unachievable fantasy. It cannot be done. This is part of the problem with these complex computer systems and complex computer-based voting systems. Even if we built them ourselves of all US components from US designs, the way we did the application specific integrated circuits that are inside the modernized GPS receivers that we haven't even started really deploying yet for the new modernized signals. Even if we did that, securing them would require absolute chain of custody, and you would lock those systems down. So one of the things we used to run types of processors, they still run them somewhere. We used to use them exclusively in the Department of Defense, called RISC, or Reduced Instruction Set. So what that means is these computers could only do what they were designed to do. You couldn't introduce software or firmware into them and make them do something they weren't designed to do, or have a, you know, complex vulnerability in them. It was like a hammer. You know, you could basically swing it, you could throw it, but you weren't going to be able to like I mean, I guess you could pull a screw out with a hammer, but anyway, they were very limited in terms of their functionality and how much you could change what they did or their form. The new computers are not like that. They cannot be secured. And so people can try to do that, but all you're going to get is a whitewash or hand waving, because the people who are capable of doing something like that, even to a level that would make them sick to their stomach because they know they don't really know the status of the systems, we don't have those people in the country. Even China does not have enough, and they've got 10 times the number of people involved in their cyber offense and defense as we do. China does not have enough people to do that kind of work on our computers, nor could they do it. They don't have that expertise. So I hope that's not discouraging, but I mean it to be kind of, educational, that we need to start thinking about things accurately. It's like if you're headed towards a cliff at 60 miles an hour, and you want to know what you can do to break the car within the last 10 feet to stop it, you can't. You have to get out of that car. The momentum of that car is not going to be stopped by any force on earth.
So Sean, thank you. By the way, I posted a link in the chat. It's one of the videos that kind of covers what Sean just said. Who enforces voter roll accuracy? Nobody is the spoiler on that, but in a cute little video, he explains why, like what he just said. I wonder if Doug is asking something a little bit different, because he posted a link to Montana statute, which says allows auditors to access and monitor any software program while it is running on the system to determine whether the software is running properly.
Yeah, for us to safely use computer-based voting systems, what should have been required was the same kind of standards we use under defense microelectronics standards for anything. Because the government has said, right, DHS stated in 2017, and I agree, voting systems and voting system architecture, including voter roll systems, are critical. They're critical infrastructure to the United States. They're essential to our national security. When something is essential to your national security, you don't allow any foreign involvement or influence on it at all. You don't allow insecurity in it. You don't tolerate uncertainty, right? This is a discussion I had with a deputy director of the National Security Agency, and that's a whole other discussion, but their dereliction of duty with respect to a strategic system was a point of contention in the meeting, and it went unfriendly really fast, because we were telling them that they were derelict in their duties. All of our election officials are derelict in their duties. Not all of them know it. The voter registration systems and the voting systems have not been built to be secured. They aren't securable. And so having auditors monitoring there in real time, if they're really good, and there's a hack or a compromise or a vulnerability or unauthorized function or connection happening, if the auditors are very good and they have complete access, they might catch it. For example, if a voting system is not supposed to have an outside connection and they see COM port activity that indicates an outside connection, right? They use HTTP stuff for both internal and external. They use UDP protocols for external, internal, but if you see a COM port showing activity that it shouldn't, that's an indicator that something unauthorized is happening. Good example, up in Wisconsin, the investigators, citizen investigators up there found, looking at records, that the voting system was connecting it was a precinct scanner that was supposed to be connected to a listening port on a server in the voting system. That was the only authorized connection. And instead it was connecting through a nonprofit. And you have no idea, once it connects to the nonprofit, you have no idea what happens to the data, who's copying it, who's distributing it, what they're inserting, right? There's no connection like that that's a one-way connection. So it was clearly in violation of the law. It was clearly not just illegal, but a complete contradiction to what the election officials stated was occurring. they only found that looking at the records, and they only found that, you know, 2 years later about the 2020 election, and 4 months or 5 months later after the 2021 election, or 2022 election. So no, 22. Yeah, it was a primary in 22, I think. And then they went back and looked and saw the same thing had happened in 2020. So if you had the real-time auditors, which we don't have, it's the same people that you would want to audit the systems to secure them, which they can't do. You would only be able to do it maybe in, I don't think you'd even be able to do the 20 or 30 largest counties in the country simultaneously, and they might catch the things. It's like SolarWinds, right? So SolarWinds, that compromise on CISA servers and DOD servers, Department of Justice servers, et cetera, that happened even though they had trained, tuned intrusion detection and prevention systems, defenders in a network center monitoring those networks and systems. The compromise happened anyway. It happened under their nose, and they did not detect it for 10 months. They didn't detect it after 10 months. They were told to look for it and what to look for. So imagine now you've got the same capability level of auditors, or even better, and they're monitoring. Even if they have complete access to that voting system, they may not see the compromises occurring, because they could occur in services that aren't even reporting or monitorable, like at the hardware level. That you can't, how would you monitor the hardware level, you know, for a voting system server? If they have an IDRAC system, you could tap into IDRAC analytics or parametrics, like the same feedback that network manager has access to, but you still might not see everything. I mean, for example, let's say somebody had hacked into or was able to log into or insert code or insert a trigger into one of the scanners, one of the remote scanners. If you're monitoring the election management system server, all that server knows is the data it gets. That scanner could tell the EMS server that it scanned and tabulated 750 trillion ballots, and the EMS server would just take that data in and say, yeah, we got 750 trillion ballots from that precinct level scanner. There's no like sanity check on it. So the humans might catch a change like that, but if it was the normal number of ballots and they were just all completely different from what the voters had actually submitted, you would never know it. They would have to be monitoring, you know, not just at the central location or wherever the server is, but each one of the scanners, each one of the touchscreen devices. It's a Sisyphean task.
Amy, you're muted.
Thank you. Doug said the goal of America First Citizens is to make the machines too expensive to use. Auditors are costly, but it's the law. So does that, and then he says, so this law makes machines impossible to use by law. Like, is it possible, Sean, that they're just not doing, even though the Montana law says that they have to be audited? Is it possible that that's just not happening? Or is it that it's maybe so superficial that it wouldn't catch anything that was there anyway?
Yeah, both of those possibilities. So first of all, auditors, right? Who are the experts that we keep seeing on all these committees? People like Kay Stimson, who has a degree in communications, like marketing. I'm not dissing marketing, it's just not a cyber skill, right? So the people that are selected as auditors can stand next to the machine and stare at it like Derek Zoolander. They're not going to see what's happening, and they won't understand that they can't see what's happening. We see this all the time.
People, the files are inside the computer.
Exactly. Yeah. We see this all the time with well-meaning citizens who serve as election judges or observers or whatever, saying, yeah, I was right there. Everything was on the up and up. It looked great. And then you start talking to them, and they don't understand until that point that they had no idea what they were looking at or what's happening inside the machines. Then the other possibility is they're just not doing it, right? I mean, we have this over and over again. I could give you 10 examples off the top of my head of the Secretary of State of Colorado and her staff violating Colorado law. It's just, I mean, they have it literally, they have video of them violating the law. and just nobody does anything about it. We report it, we make declarations, nobody has done anything about it. This happens over and over again.
Yeah, so Doug, I just put, if they're not, if they're just not doing it, like Sean's saying, happens not just in Colorado, but we know in other states too, then that would explain why you can't find anything. And I mean, I think the alternative too would be, can you do whatever this your state equivalent is of FOIA? Like, could you do some public records requests there to find out what about the audits? And maybe that would, maybe that would turn up nothing, or maybe that would lead you to some company name or something.
They may also have foisted the whole risk limiting audit sham. So that has been pushed by NASA and NASID. Philip Stark, the kind of father of it, has disavowed the way they are being used. And the reason is, and we talked about this in another forum, but the risk limiting audit is an adaptation of a sampling audit that was implemented during World War II production of munitions, bullets and artillery shells, because they were producing so many, they couldn't inspect them the way that they used to do it. So instead they implemented this random sampling approach to auditing. And what they're trying to find out is, like, what's the number, you know, what's the percentage of these that are going to fail when fired, which could be life or death for an individual or an entire, you know, fleet, depending on the circumstances, or, you know, entire squadron of aircraft or whatever. So, like, if they don't kill the Messerschmitt, then the Messerschmitt starts taking out bombers, kind of a thing. So it was an adaptation of that, but it is only sufficient to some level of confidence detect manufacturing defects. It is not sufficient, and it's intended to be used as part of a larger quality control plan with other sampling and other quality control measures, including external verification and validation, not just internal controls. So this is a primary tenet of 100% of auditing in environments that require auditing, is that the moment you have an internal control fail, you must have an external independent audit with full access. We have internal controls fail all the time, literally every election, probably in every state, and nobody ever requires the independent external audit. So the risk limiting audit, and the second problem with risk limiting audit is it's completely and totally inadequate to detect fraud. It's not designed for fraud. If you understand how the auditing works and you can control which samples are selected, which you can, that's the whole point of Democracy Works risk limiting audit software, is to choose specific samples. In theory, they're random, because we pretend to do a random seed, but then it goes into this black box of software and hardware that's picking, you know, the ballots. It's like a three cup game where you always have a tell, and you can always pick the cup that doesn't have the you know, coin underneath it, if that makes sense.
It does make sense that our elections are one big shell game. All right, I see we have a couple of hands up. Before I forget, because this was kind of way up in the chat, I'm not sure who JF is in North Carolina, but they said, I usually like to, about the videos, I usually like to read because it's faster. I like to get a transcript along with the video, not always possible to have volume in public places, for instance. So I just want to interject here and say that the Election 101 videos that Sean and I are producing, that is my intention. Right now I'm trying to get, we've recorded a ton and I'm trying to produce, well, I'm not trying, I'm focusing on getting those produced and out, the little ones. But it is my intention that we will put it in multiple formats so that we'll also have an audio only version. And because some people like to, you know, play stuff in the car or whatever, where they're not necessarily looking at the video, or they don't want that extra bandwidth of the video, and eventually to also have transcripts as well. So stay tuned. That's coming. All right. So I see we got a couple of hands up. Go ahead, Alan.
Oh, okay. Well, this is another specific kind of Tennessee question.
Okay.
We've only got 6 counties that we were able to get the cast vote records from 2020. And I've looked at 3 or 4 of them so far, just sort of preliminary it appears that our elections were attacked through the absentee voter process. We have a semi-strict system where you have to actually make a written request to be put on, or a request to be put on the rolls. And I'm wondering if we have any insight on how to uncover that, looking at the voter rolls. I can get a monthly subscription to this thing and get it updated every month and look at how it changes, which costs $10,000. I'm looking for some ideas on how to find where they put people on the list and take them off, because that's apparently what's going on.
Yeah. Did you catch our previous research roundtable, Alan, that was on the February 8th?
No, I've been sick for months, and just the first one I've been on in a couple of months.
Oh, well, I'm glad you're feeling well enough to join us today.
Yeah.
Hopefully on the mend. You might want to go check out the replay to that, because okay. Data Jeff had done a presentation on that very topic.
Okay. That's on the 8th.
That was February 8th, yes.
Okay.
So I think that'll be useful to you. And then I can also connect you with Vico, who I think after you watch that I think you'll have a better idea of like how everything connects. And then I can connect you with somebody on our team who could probably help you look at specifically, you said Tennessee, right?
Right.
Yeah, at Tennessee voter rolls. Does okay. that sound good?
Thank you.
Okay. I'm just making myself a note about that. Okay. All right. Go ahead, Gail.
Hi, everyone. Couple things. Yeah, this has to do with Help America Vote Act. And I'm going to go back to where we were at before, or at the beginning, if I may kind of share with you where I'm at in my research, where I'm stuck in my research, where I could ask for some assistance and hopefully help out others along the way, if I may. First of all, to Sean's comments about the Help America Vote Act, and that's really interesting that you know these people. I've been doing a lot of research on it, and I filed a complaint here in Arizona with 17 counts of violations of the Help America Vote Act. Specifically though, one of the things that, and because the Help America Vote Act covers every single state in this union and territory, because each and every one of us has each one of our states has also accepted the money, they are required by law to follow these minimum requirements. And specifically, I mean, the voting systems are the software and the firmware and all of those things that Sean was talking about that need to be audited and certified, that's in the Help America Vote Act. And that's in, let me tell you exactly, 30, I think it's 301 B. But 301, yeah, 6B actually. And it defines a voting system, the total combination of mechanical, electrical equipment, including with software, firmware, and documentation required to program, control, and support the equipment that is used. So this is what's supposed to be certified, and of course that's not happening. So these are violations of the Help America Vote Act. The other thing is I know you were going to talk about Eric today. I know there are cases in Wisconsin right now that, you know, they are trying to fight this, but all of our records are supposed to be held within the state agencies and not offsite. That's Help America Vote Act as well. Where I, the good news and the bad news, the good news, and specifically in Arizona, interestingly enough, I was looking at one of the statutes in our in Arizona that says, and fortunately, it's part of the case, Carrie Lake's case here, but it says machines or devices used at any election for federal, state, or county offices may only be certified for use in the state and may only be used in the state if they comply with the Help America Vote Act of 2002. Well, that just means in Arizona, they cannot use the machines in any election if they do not comply with the Help America Vote Act in 2002. I would suggest maybe y'all in your states kind of see if there's anything like this or not. Again, I understand we have criminals running the justice system right now, and there are a lot of broken laws, and you know, we've proven that the laws have been broken. However, we just have to continue to going on with this lawfare. What I'm running into right now is I filed an administrative complaint. And by the way, every state must provide administrative complaint processes. And I'm recommending everybody look this up on your Secretary of State website. Our administrative complaint processes were not updated with the current election procedural manual, which is actually 2019. The Secretary of State gave us the 2014 manual and as a point of reference. So they've already broken the law there. I, along with 11 other people, filed this Administrative Help Vote Act complaint, and according to our procedures, all we're supposed to do is just send it over to, you know, the Secretary of State's office. Well, once it got in there, because I've sued the Secretary of State on a number of occasions already personally, pro se, I had sent it over to Amy Chan, the attorney for the Secretary of State, and she came back and just said, we're not going to do anything with this. We consider this case closed. These are not Help America Vote Act complaints. And I literally copied all Title III complaints and copied and pasted all of them, the actual laws that they were in violation of. So I'm stuck between a rock and a hard place. I don't really know where to go here, because this is, there doesn't seem to be any recourse. And I'm just wondering if anybody knows of any recourse of what my next steps might be here.
All right. Anybody have suggestions for Gail? Yeah, Erica?
Well, I don't know that I would call it a suggestion, but I do think that I'm kind of on the same side with Sean in a sense, because I don't believe this act was designed to help us vote. I don't think it was designed to help us at all. I think it was written to funnel money, and they don't care about, you know, what's in the text of the law necessarily. So I kind of feel like, you know, and I've been rooting for everyone that's been filing these complaints. I would love to see some success. I just haven't seen that yet. But you know, I don't know if it's, you know, so if we're complaining about the elections in our state, we can't go complain to the people running the elections in our state is kind of where I'm stuck on that whole thing. So I wish I had like a better answer, but I just don't know if there is one.
Well, I think, well, in my reading of the Help America Vote Act, which I've done a lot of, it was created so that the people had their rights and their checks and balances, you know, to be able to be put in place. This is a checks and balances. Now, again, we have to agree that this is broken, and I may not get this in this state, right? But there are other states that may or may not be able to get this. I know we've got some, you know, stuff going on in Oklahoma, Minnesota. There are, you know, some things moving forward, but and you're right. It's kind of like asking, what is it, the wolf to watch over the hen house, right? And then asking the wolf to protect you. But you don't know without trying. And the fact that they're blatantly breaking this law so obviously, it's frustrating. But these laws were absolutely put into place so that these minimum requirements were there, and they actually state that there's no reason to not go back to that you cannot go back to hand counts. And then it does say multiple times that these are minimum requirements if you want to use the machines. These are there. It's filled with shells. I'll put my my website in here. And if anybody wants to click on the Have a Resources tab at the top, you can do so, and you can look at the complaint, and you can look at the statutes. You can look at the highlighted version of the Help America Vote Act that's in there as well, that kind of highlights a lot of these things. But the fact that, you know, in our case, even, you know, Carrie Lake's case, and in Arizona, that it says that you cannot use these machines if they do not comply with the Help America Vote Act, it brings it full circle. So it's not just about the Help America Vote Act, it's about the fact that we have state and federal laws being broken here. And it's one way that we can try and get rid of these machines.
I'd love to hear Sean weigh in on this.
Yes, please.
If he's still on.
I'm still on. In the form of a question, what do we do since they're not complying at all with the requirements of HAVA, but they're still getting the funding? This is part of the this is part of the discussion on the National Election Integrity Strategy. Is one of the ways that we approach rectifying this entire, you know, architecture of fraud is by forcing, I mean, they're not even complying with the laws on the books right now, right? They're saying that their systems comply. They're getting funding on that basis. That is a misrepresentation. So this is one of the things we were talking about needs to be part of the legal strategy, but this isn't something that an individual is going to be able to easily take on pro se. I would recommend take a look at Singer versus Hart, Singer v. Hart, InterCivic. This was a case in Colorado. He was a former Hart InterCivic employee that sued the Hart InterCivic QTAM on behalf of the U.S. government because Hart InterCivic was fraudulently misrepresenting their voting systems. Secretaries of State and other certifying authorities that have obtained federal funds under HABA and under CARES Act on the predicate that they are in compliance with, as they have certified in writing, as they're required to as part of the grant process, they have certified in writing that they are compliant, and we know they are not. That is a false misrepresentation for the purpose of obtaining the funds. They have fraudulently misrepresented the status of the compliance in their states. And there's a case to be made there that the federal government will never bring under this justice system, but which it may be possible for individuals and organizations to sue all of those secretaries of states or any of them individually. And the fact that they've been doing this and that NASS and NACID have been helping them cover up, that's a whole other aspect. EAC individuals and the EAC, the NASS and NACID, are part of a potential RICO cover-up of the fraudulent misrepresentation by these public officials resulting in the expenditure of the federal funds for uncertified and uncertifiable systems that don't meet the requirements under HABA Act. So it's a house of cards that's waiting for somebody to kick a card out from underneath the bottom of it. I don't know if we're going to get it done or not. We may have a fantastic case and have it, you know, be poorly received or dismissed by corrupt judges. I just don't know. You know, we don't know about any of this. We just keep pushing everywhere. Yeah, Amy says the Singer v. Hart. So if you look at Singer v. Hart, you can see an example of what a QI-TAM lawsuit against fraudulent misrepresentation and fraudulent claims looks like. So the question is just, you know, at what point can we get, you know, a coherent legal effort to bring a case against secretaries of state? And the critical thing, and I didn't understand this before, the attorneys are constantly trying to get me to understand things, the because I'm like, it's wrong, and they're like, yeah, but that's not how the legal system works. So the so they basically deal with my immaturity and ignorance about the legal system. But one of the things that's really important is that you not bring a case that's poorly formed or poorly evidenced, so that you then end up with a precedent that works against subsequent cases or better formed cases. You want really to get it right the first time. And so that's why we're not just bringing cases left and right, even though we see these issues, is because we have to get, you know, some legal expertise, have them well documented, well argued, and then they can be dismissed under fraudulent circumstances like the ones in Arizona have been. I mean, unbelievable that Tucci down there actually considered sanctions against the attorneys, or approved a pursuit of sanctions against the attorneys involved in that case, or that the judge in the second Lake v. Hobbs case ignored Richer changing his tune literally on the stand from one day to the next, and saying on one day, oh yeah, that's not totally not a problem, and then the next day or 2 days later, yeah, we've had this problem in three elections, or for elections for 3 years. Yeah, we've had a problem with these machines. We know about it. We're working on it. But you used to have an election, and you lied about it 2 days ago, and the judge still pretended that that didn't happen. It's insanity, but that's our system. I mean, we don't, you know, like I've said before, I don't have the luxury of being, and don't ever think about whether I'm encouraged or discouraged. I just know what we have to do. So after this, I'll go back to Michelle, be glad, and or although maybe still disappointed, but I'll go back to working on a strategy, and hopefully we can talk about it as teams of teams about, you know, what needs to be done and where we need to focus our efforts. But for this part, everything you guys are doing, you know, the grassroots is everything. The involvement of the citizens and the states is everything. Because like we've talked about before, if we fixed every single one of these issues, like tonight, like if by a stroke of a pen or a wave of a wand, we could eliminate the voting machines, get rid of the centralized rolls, eliminate mail-in balloting, it would all happen again, unless we get citizens involved in understanding what they're entitled to from elections and an election system, what they have the right to demand, and then they, you know, commit, as we all are, they commit to just being engaged, right? Citizenship, it never ends. We don't get to lay it down. If we lay it down, the people who mean to corrupt it will again.
I agree, especially with the RICO. I've been talking about the RICO along, you know, for a while. I mean, this seems like a total RICO case. All across. So I definitely would be interested in talking to you more about this, Sean, as well. Thank you for your insight. And I'm just gonna keep moving on. I have a report. I've got a reporter that's gonna be doing an article about it. And I'm just, you know, we just gotta keep holding these guys accountable. I think public pressure is really the way we're gonna do it, to your point, which is why I'm trying like heck to get, you know, get this information out there, you know, as any way I can, to you, to everywhere, to Carrie, to everywhere. But a lot of what I'm finding is a lot of people are, you know, they're really busy. There's a lot to learn about the Help America Vote Act, and there's a defeatist attitude, you know, kind of where we have, you know, it's not gonna matter anyway because it's all corrupt, you know. But I'm aligned with Mike Lindell in the mindset of lawfare, and I'm also aligned with Sean and Mike and, you know, Kurt and everybody else I've spoken to, is that it has to be done. You have to do it right.
All right. So I know we have just a few minutes left, and we have a couple more pieces of business to handle. So thanks, Gail and Sean. Speaking of lawfare, I have a retired attorney who is willing to come speak to our research roundtable group. However, before he commits to a specific date, He wants to know, what do you guys want to know about? So I need to hear from you, like, specifically, understanding that this is an attorney in a particular state who's not going to be able to legally advise you on what you're doing in your state. What is kind of an overarching topic that you would love to have an attorney come present to our group? So you guys can either list them, since we're short on time, you can list them in the chat, or if you don't have access to the chat, then yeah, feel free to put your hand up so I can call on you. So that's the first thing I need input on, is what would you like a lawyer to come speak to our group about or share with you with regards to election integrity? I also have two people that can come speak to us about data analysis. And so I will be scheduling those. If you have a specific topic, you know, like Alan had brought up, like, how do we look at the roles and know what we're looking at, or how do we identify, or how do we know what to look for? Or if there's another, if there's a different topic that you would like them to speak about, just let me know. And if you can't think of it right now, excuse me, sorry guys, I had a little tickle there. If you can't think of it right now, just send me an email, asg@causeofamerica.org, and say, oh, can we get somebody to come speak about this or whatever. But I definitely have two data analyst people that will come speak to our group. And then, and I have a very special computer expert that I don't think I'm going to say yet, because I'd like to wait until I have this person scheduled before I announce. But you guys are really going to love that. So that's cool. In addition to all of that, what topics would you like us to tackle? Whether it could be something specific that you're working on. I'm sure we could do like a whole research roundtable on HAVA, but really any topic. It could be a specific vendor. It could be, I mean, really, it's up to you guys, right? These are your roundtables. So it could be something you're working on, or it could be something that maybe you're looking at tackling next, but you don't want to reinvent the wheel. So I would love to hear what topics you guys would like to focus on in the coming months. And then also we can, we could pull, like, I could pull, if we have the topics, like, in an ideal world, I'd love to have our next four planned out and scheduled. I know that's not always easy for speakers to plan like that, but if we can do that, that would be great. And then I can, ahead of the meeting, send you guys, like, here's the kind of stuff we have about this topic already in the library, and here's the best search terms for you to locate those, like that kind of stuff. Or here's other resources that we've pulled that are related to this topic. And then you guys can share yours as well. So like Alan says, I'd love to hear about suing for revocation of surety bonds. So the like bonds for the win strategy, and need help converting CVR to I think it's pronounced JSON format. Okay, I'm going to write that down. Okay, and David has been very patiently waiting. Go ahead, David.
I, as far as a lawyer, I would probably, the first meeting, if you could instruct them to just kind of give a 30,000 foot overview of case structure, lawfare, building a case, just the overview of how to properly structure a case. I play with a lot of lawyers and have been involved with them for quite a few years. So there's as much of a learning curve trying to go down that path as trying to learn election stuff. But there's a lot of ins and outs, case law, researching case law, referring to case law that can really help people quite a bit, would be a good jumping off point with them.
Okay, cool. This person has helped with a lot of, with several of the cases in Colorado. And so he can definitely speak to, you know, what they did with those cases and how they set them up and all of that. But he was when I talked to him, he's very willing to present, but it was also kind of like, well, hold on. I'm like not an expert in certain areas. And so what do they want to hear about specifically? I'm like, I don't know, but I'll ask them. So that's what I'm asking. So that's very helpful. That's very helpful, David. And I feel like that fits within what he's comfortable talking about. So I think that'll be really good. Erica, you put Eric. Did you mean like the voter rolls, Eric?
No, that was my guess. That was my guess on your guest.
No.
Oh, okay, okay.
But I will neither confirm nor deny any further guesses. Okay, Edie's. Hey, Edie. She's got a good question. Is he familiar with federal laws or laws from his state? That's a good question. I can ask him that. All right, I got that on my list. All right, cool. Yeah, well, okay. I think that's it. You know, we have like 3 minutes, so we're ending on time here. I want to thank everyone for being here. Please do feel free to send me your ideas of what you'd love to focus on specifically in upcoming research roundtables. Our next meeting is, I think it's March 8th. Let me just check that. Yeah, it should be because February, March, same dates, right? Yeah, March. So it'll be March 8th and March 22nd will be the next two. And like I said, if I can get our presenters lined up or our topics lined up ahead of time, then I can give everybody plenty of notice on that. But do feel free to send me your ideas or what you'd like to hear about from data specialists, as well as our legal expert and any other topics. Thank you for being here. Thank you for everything that you're doing. And I hope you guys have a fantastic week. I'll see you next time.